Hello, my name's Guy Somerset, and I'm the Books and Culture Editor of the New Zealand Listener. Welcome to the first of our Listener Book Club podcasts for 2013. We're discussing Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice, which is celebrating its 200th anniversary. With me today to discuss the book, I have Todd Atticus of Unity Books in Wellington, Jenna Todd of Time Out Bookstore in Auckland, and Christopher Howe, who is a writer and blogger. And I'm going to begin by asking a very ungallant question that I'm sure Mr. Darcy would never ask of anybody. I want to ask you each how old you are, which I think is probably quite significant when it comes to reading a book like this and maybe getting a sense of how it plays for different generations. So first of all, to be really ungallant, I'm going to begin with you, Jenna.
Okay, I'm 27.
You're 27.
And the last time I read Pride and Prejudice, I think I was about 9. So I didn't really remember it at all.
Okay, although that's impressive, reading it at 9 at all. We'll perhaps come back to that. Christopher, how old are you, please?
I'm 48. It's the first time I've read the book, but I've seen the adaptation, so I was a bit of a disadvantage coming to the written text for the first time.
I was going to say, that's another aspect of it which I'm interested in too. And finally, Todd, how old are you, please?
I'm 26, and it's the first time that I've even read the first sentence.
Okay. So I'm going to begin with you, Todd, because you've had 200 years to read this thing.
I know, I've been lazy. But
have you read other Jane Austen?
No. It's the first reading of Pride and Prejudice and my first Austen piece as well. I don't think anyone can come to this one clean. I haven't actually even seen the film adaptations, the many that have been over the years. But I am kind of acutely aware they kind of seep into pop culture through various kind of vehicles and means and film posters and film trailers, etc. And I am very acquainted with the idea of Mr. Darcy's common first as well. So even though I haven't read it before, I kind of know things by a kind of weird roundabout way. I must say I really, really enjoyed it, and I'm really glad that I have finally prized it open.
I was going to say, I mean, what to expect? I mean, you hadn't read any other Jane Austen?
None.
So what were you kind of expecting? What kind of is the hype from your point of view?
I was expecting something that was very floral, written with a kind of very grand style, I guess. But I was expecting something with that central love story and all its kind of deviations, but I wasn't really sure what to expect, which is kind of an interesting thing. I didn't know exactly where the plot would go, what kinds of characters would slot in, and how even it would conclude. So I did come with a kind of relatively blank slate as well.
That strikes me as a wonderful position to be into, because I don't think there's probably many people since the book's publication, or at least in the past perhaps 100 years, who've been able to come to it without really kind of knowing beforehand what's going to happen. Christopher, you said that you'd seen the TV versions of it, so did you find that kind of helped or undermined your reading of the book?
I don't think it undermined it so much. I mean, I think, as you say, most people know what happens, and to cut text for the first time was really interesting, and I so really enjoyed. I mean, I think for those who saw the early 90s adaptation with Colin Firth, his manner and his way of speaking, his accent and his appearance, you know, are Mr. Darcy for many of us. And you just have to look on the internet these days, and they still use his image as Mr. Darcy. So he's certainly iconic, and I could hear him speaking as I read it. But nevertheless, even knowing what happens, coming to the text and the humour and the irony, but the way that Jane Austen has put the story together is just remarkable, considering that it's 200 years ago that she wrote it. So I really enjoyed it, and I saw and found a lot in the book that I wasn't expecting, And I think that it's a remarkable achievement. I can see why it's still so popular today.
Jenna, you said you read it there when you were nine. Do you have any kind of memories of actually a pre-Colin Firth Mr. Darcy? I've read it before, and Colin Firth has kind of completely overwhelmed any sense I might have had previously of Mr. Darcy, which I think is unfortunate. Perhaps you have the good fortune of not having seen the Mr. Darcy with Colin Firth.
Oh, well now, when I just got flashbacks as I was reading, but I really think when I was young, I was given it as a young reader, and a young advanced reader, all Jane Austen, and I just think it went completely over my head, to be honest. I would have just read it and not really, but I sort of understood the family dynamics, but my visuals are not that strong, but definitely 90s, I remember Sunday Theatre, Pride and Prejudice on television, so I think those memories are actually a lot stronger for me.
Yeah.
And so it was, but it wasn't a terrible thing to read it with those visuals in my head of what the characters look like as famous celebrities, and I think it really added for me. And I think Colin Firth and also the Bridget Jones, Mr. Darcy thing as well really, really heightened it as well for me.
Yeah. Todd, as the person who came to it completely with the blank slate, I'm quite intrigued to see how you kind of read those early stages of the book, because it struck me rereading it that she doesn't let a lot of way about Wickham, for instance, and you're not entirely sure where Wickham and Darcy are going to go in terms of each other. I mean, were you kind of, pleasantly in ignorance, as it were, there when you're reading?
I wasn't entirely, yes. I think someone gave it away that I should be maybe thinking of Mr. Wickham differently than I originally was during that first section of the book. But certainly I had no idea of where the characters would and their actions would later kind of manifest. So I was deliciously ignorant of that, and it was just going with the flow, as it were. I must say, my initial thoughts about quite a few characters were later changed. And I think that's almost, I feel, part of the delight of the book, in that everyone finds either some kind of resolution or changes in some way. But no, I must say I was quite surprised at the various deviations the plot took. Though I couldn't help thinking that Mr. Darcy was too central a character for him to forever be seen as one of the bad guys, as it were.
With regard to the characters, Christopher, do you think that they are consistently well-drawn throughout? Are there weak characters in there? Are they all plausible figures?
I think they're plausible but exaggerated, and I think that's one of the joys of the book, in a way, is that Austen's, she's taken society at that time, and she's created these people who show us what life was like. And they are exaggerated so that we get the full impact of the contrasts between those who have money, those who don't have money, the landed gentry and the others. There are a lot of characters, of course, and some of them are very much over the top. I mean, Collins, for example, is hilarious and embarrassing. I mean, you can feel yourself cringing when he's delivering his addresses. But I to go to that previous point there about what's going on in the book and do you know what's going to happen? I mean, if you have a general idea of what's going to happen, you can see Jane Austen placing these events really early on. I mean, particularly with Darcy, when he criticizes her looks and then immediately is attracted to her when he looks at her eyes, and you know, that's very early on in the first 20 or 30 pages. So you're thinking, well, you know, something's going to happen here, and then you see her put Wickham in and Bingley and see Elizabeth attracted in different ways. But you know in the end that the arc is going to come back there, because she shows you what Darcy's thinking. But overall, they are very full-on, very exaggerated characters to make sure that we completely understand the challenges and the difficulties of living in that kind of society.
Do you think the book is redeemable as a feminist book? It strikes me that it is, but I know a lot of people might argue and have argued the other way, very strongly the other way. Jenna, did you think that, if you really read it closely, that it's actually quite a strong critique of that kind of dependency of all the women characters on money and the men that they might be married off to?
Well, it's a bit difficult because you could look at Elizabeth like a strong feminist figure choosing not to marry Mr. Collins and going against her family wishes, but then she does in the end marry the richest guy around, so she does end up being quite comfortable. But for her to have that, those thoughts, because even when I was reading it, I thought, gosh, she should, you know, help her family keep the house, and she should marry Mr. Collins no matter what. But, you know, she's thinking for herself and strong, and will speak to men in a way where she's being negative towards them, which I think wouldn't usually be done that way with her, and with her, where she sits, and the, you know, the way she speaks to men who are higher class than her as well. So I think she's a great female role model. But she does end up getting everything anyway.
Yes. I mean, how do Todd and Christopher, how do you feel about that ending? Do you think the ending kind of, and the inevitable ending perhaps, undermines some of the things that have happened before and been kind of presented before? Todd?
I'm not sure about undermines. I think it's necessary to have the book as it is to conclude in the way that it does. And I don't think it undermines Elizabeth as a character or everything that happens before that. I feel that her redemption as a character, and you mentioned the kind of a feminist critique stance, I think come into the earlier scenes where she is kind of learning about herself and what she wants, and certainly that scene with Mr. Collins where he proposes to her is just fantastic for many different reasons. I like the fact that she refuses, but I also like the manner in which she does. It's stunning. It's a stunning scene, and I think probably my favourite from the whole piece. But no, not undermined by the end.
Christopher, what about you?
No, I think it's not undermined. She's very much, well, Elizabeth Bennet is very much a woman of the time, and she understands that. And it's, I think for me, it's more about the class system than necessarily the feminist side. Clearly, she's a woman who's standing up for herself and not complying or conforming to the way that society necessarily works in those days by not marrying Mr. Collins and thinking about Mr. Darcy. But in the bigger picture, she's very much part of it. And you know, she says when they have the scene where they're talking at the piano, you can see that. That she understands absolutely the way things work. You know, she says nobody can ever be introduced in the ballroom, and she agrees with Darcy, and immediately they start that the rapport really starts there. So it is about class and less about feminism. I mean, her standing up to Lady Catherine is you know, brilliant the way that she does that.
Yeah.
In the end, though, she does conform by marrying someone that's got money and got land. Although, you know, it's clear that she does love him, and so she gets the best of both worlds in the end.
And in a way, yeah, Austin was. Oh, sorry, Top.
No, I was agreeing with you, Christopher. It is just. It's not about the money specifically in the end, which I guess is the redemptive part of that.
And Austin was obviously having to tread a very fine line. I mean, obviously, she was, as you say, very much a product of her time. She clearly had a very, very good eye on that time and understood it very well. But she was. Would also be working within the restraints of the form of the novel at that time too. The question of class, I think, is a very interesting one. I mean, there's so many layers of class and snobbery in this book. I mean, there's wonderful bits where you know, she kind of talks about the Bingleys looking down on people, but then she looks down on the Bingleys. And there's another great point when Darcy is even able to be kind of snobbish about Lady Catherine. It's a very fine kind of filigree of class that's presented in this book, isn't it, Christopher?
And it's a very fine and it's a way of living which is dominated by many, many unwritten rules. You know, there's that scene where they're walking and Darcy doesn't speak to, I think it's the gardeners, because he's not been introduced. Despite the fact that they're standing, you know, 2 yards behind Elizabeth, they don't talk to each other. And there's that whole process of that you must be introduced by someone else before you can even have a conversation with people. I mean, Collins approaches Darcy at that ball and talks to him, and Darcy is deeply shocked and offended that someone would approach and talk to him having not been introduced prior. You can't imagine not introducing yourself to someone you don't know today. And there are all these unwritten rules and all these layers which make it a fascinating portrait of that time. But Austin, I think, I mean, I'm not very familiar with the biography of Austin, but I think she wrote them and published them pretty much anonymously through her brother. So while she was living in a family which encouraged debate and dialogue and intellectual growth and writing, and so that was how she was able to write the books. But I think that in terms of being recognised as the author, that was relatively limited in her lifetime.
I guess the ambiguity that runs through is, you know, the extent to which she's critiquing these manners, these kind of class strictures, and the extent to which she's kind of accepting and party to them. Did you feel that was ambiguous through the book, Jenna?
Yeah, I do think so. And I one thing that really interested me was how the Bennets were looked down upon by other people, but then they had a woman that came in and did their hair, which I would think would, you know, not everybody would definitely not have that. I think the class systems were, I'm just drawing a blank, so I think that it was just done really well. I thought it was, I just think it's such an awesome book.
You say that because I'm interested to know, you know, we all read a lot of contemporary novels. How does this read in comparison with the contemporary novel? I mean, one of the criticisms that was made, I think, of The Forests, which got a lot of stick, was one person said that, you know, there were too many words. Well, there's a lot of words in this book. I mean, you know, thoughts are excavated to the nth degree throughout the book, aren't they, Christopher?
Yes, for sure. I mean, we see a lot of Elizabeth. I mean, she dominates, written in the third person, but we also see from a very early stage the thoughts of other characters, and that's, I guess, you know, it's one way of writing it, but it does remove some of the tension, because you know right from the outset that Darcy is attracted to her, because you hear him think that, and I don't know that overall it's a remarkable achievement. How it would go down today if you send it to a publisher, well, we know because someone did that. They sent some adapted versions to some publishers and they all got rejected, and it was a big news story a few years ago. But I think that overall the impact is huge. The way she's amplified the society of the day, shown us that, made it almost... it's almost satirical or ironic in the way that she's exaggerated it to show the foolhardiness and the difficulty and the awkwardness of the way society works, so that people reading it would think, God, you know, are we really like that? You know, is that really how we live? And you can see why it had such a huge impact and was a bestseller and has been for a couple of hundred years.
Can any of us think of any contemporary writers who have the same ability, are doing something similar with the world today? I mean, people often talk about who her successors are, but it always strikes me that they're taking a very kind of narrow sense, a narrow idea about what she did. Can we think of anybody who's doing something similar now?
J.K. Rowling. Blackout in The Casual Vacancy, I think.
Yeah, you think?
She has a very, very similar concern, I think, to Jane Austen. I'd almost view it as kind of, minus this essential love story, it's certainly a critique of class, and it's certainly a very kind of socially aware novel. Possibly Zadie Smith as well.
Yes, actually, yes, Smith, I think, is a good name to mention there. She has that same completeness as well, I think.
Hmm. Or Capital by John Lanchester, I think, could be that British class system as well, and that the anxiety between all of the classes and what everybody thinks, and everybody's just living in this constant state of worrying about what other people think about them.
One of the nice things in the book, recurring theme is that people who read are generally good. You know, people who go off into the library are kind of presented in a very good way. Did you get that? Did anybody else sort of pick up on that?
Yeah, they would bring up... Oh, sorry.
Go on, Jeff.
I think that they would, you know... the way Elizabeth would defend herself a lot would say, well, I read, which was really cool. and she believes that she is intelligent from that as well.
I mean, another aspect of the book, it struck me, was, I mean, you know, we often think of these as comedy of manners, but actually one of the strong things going through the book is that people who judge other people on manners alone are going to fall a cropper, which is what happens with Elizabeth and Darcy. They both kind of judge each other on their superficial manners, and Wickham's main attraction is that he's very well-mannered, but actually those aren't very strong characteristics. Did you think that was... did you see that in the book, Todd?
Yeah, it's certainly a book where actions speak louder than words and politenesses. The characters live or die by what they actually do, and certainly I think it's a very strong strong criticism of society in a way that it's quite a kind of a facile way of living. I love that scene where the Bennets come round and they are presuming that Jane is going to marry Bingham, and they kind of they let it all out a little bit, and Darcy sees this kind of unmannered approach and immediately kind of seeks to detach himself and seeks to advise Bingham to do so, but really he got it completely wrong, and it's quite a kind of a facile way of viewing people.
Yeah, the Bennets rising above all the Bennets. I mean, you said the Bennets there, but I mean, rising above the family and in counterpoint to the wonderful grotesque of Mrs. Bennet is Mr. Bennet. Mr. Bennet, especially now that I'm, you know, when I first read it, I kind of thought, well, he's okay. But I'm now 48, like Christopher, and I have two children, and Mr. Bennet is now my favourite character in the novel. Who were some of your favourite characters in the novel? Jenna, who stood out for you?
Well, I really liked the characters of Mrs. Bennet and Lydia for how much I detested them, because they're just so, they remind me of like watching Downton Abbey, and there's those characters in there that are just there to wind everybody up, and how Mrs. Bennet would just change her mind according to however she fell, and how she'd lie in bed being ill for days after receiving bad news. I just thought it was so dramatic and wonderful, and made my emotions get really angry at her, which was good. the bad ones are my favourite.
Yes, I mean, the bad characters really do stand out, don't they? Christopher, who were your favourite characters to read, if not to be in the room with?
Oh, yes, well, definitely to read and not be in the room with. I mean, I guess I think of it in pairs, really, and my favourite bits were when Elizabeth was interacting with Collins and with Lady Catherine. I mean, especially when Lady Catherine walks out in the garden. So actually, you know, I thought the way she drew those characters, especially Lady Catherine, were fantastic. I mean, just hilarious in a way, and also the very brave to put those words into the mouth of a high noble person in the UK, and then publish that, you know, yeah. was incredible. And so that interaction, and in some ways, just sort of thinking about the book, that if it were to have been written today, maybe an editor would have cut some of the internal reflection, some of the lots of words that you described earlier, where Elizabeth or other characters are reflecting on themselves and having long, complicated discussions with themselves, would maybe have cut that out and just allowed the real character of Elizabeth and the others to come through in those interactions with each other, which are very sharp and very tight when they actually happen, and in contrast to all of that internal reflection.
They are tight, aren't they? I mean, some of the comedy, some of the kind of mockery can be broad, but sometimes it can just come down to a well-placed word. I mean, it can be so finely sharpened. It's quite amazing. Todd, your favourite characters?
Oh, my favourite characters. Well, again, like Christopher, I think viewing in pairs, and it's so easy to say Elizabeth and Darcy, and they have their charms and uniquenesses, but the relationship between Mr. Bennet and Mrs. Bennet, I thought was fantastic. It's probably the scenes where they're involved had me howling the most in a way. I love the character of Mr. Bennet, I feel overbeared by Mrs. Bennet, and she's a sharp one, and she has some fantastic retorts. I mean, she's not one to cross. But as a character, I loved her. She really popped from the page for me.
I'm afraid we're running out of time, but I just wanted to ask a couple of questions. Firstly, Todd, you were the novice. This was your first one. Will there be more?
Perhaps in time. Yes, I think I'm quite intrigued to read Sense and Sensibility. I was just reading about that last night, thinking, I could give that a shot. It's certainly I'd like to read Pride and Prejudice again as well. Just now I know where the plot goes, I can almost sit back with it and enjoy the ride in a different sense.
And Jenna, has it sent you back to read some more now after that burst, rather too young perhaps at nine?
Yes, I will. I'm definitely going to go back. And I'm going to go straight to the DVD store when I get back to Auckland and watch the Colin Firth movie again.
Don't do it. Don't do it to yourself. It'll ruin it for all future rereadings. Please, keep away.
Yeah.
And if
I think it's so good.
Mrs. Bennett will be ruined as well, I have to say. As much as Mr. Darcy's been ruined for me, Alison Steadman's completely over the top. Mrs. Bennett has destroyed that part for me as well. Christopher, will you be reading some more now?
Definitely. I'm going to go and look at one of the later ones, perhaps one of the two that got published posthumously, and have a go at that. So it's been a great experience reading it in the original text, and I'll definitely go back and read some more.
And then finally, very quickly, a yes-no answer, I'm afraid, because we are running out of time, but I'm just quite intrigued. Our competition this week has been to write yourself as a Jane Austen character. Would you be happy to be in a room with Jane Austen? I would not want to be within a village with Jane Austen, but what about the rest of you? Would you think you'd come off well or badly if Jane Austen got her eye on you? Christopher?
I'm sure I'd come off incredibly badly, and I'd stay well away from Jane Austen.
Jenna?
No, I don't want to be near her.
I mean, it's a loaded question. I'm sure I know the answer, but perhaps Todd is better than all of us, and he's happy to be in that room. Todd?
Positively angelic. No, I don't think anyone would talk to me ever again if I was to feature.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you, everybody. It's been great talking to you. And we'll be back next month with Mohsin Hamid and his new novel to talk about. But until then, thanks for listening.